Greetings to you on this day as we jump into chapter 15 of My Soul Waits by Marva Dawn. The title of this chapter, Tasting the Lord's Goodness. And this is Psalm 34, verses 8 through 10. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed are those who take refuge in him. Fear the Lord, you his holy people, for those who fear him lack nothing. The lions may grow weak and hungry, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. Well, the eighth verse of Psalm 34 seems to be meant for just this kind of sensate learning. The poet doesn't merely say, check out the goodness of Yahweh. Rather, he encourages us to taste and see that the Lord is good. The verb translated to taste urges us to examine by experience, by jumping right into God's goodness. So that statement, to taste and see that the Lord is good, it's a strong motivation for our witness to others. Many have not entered into a relationship with God because they've never maybe tasted God's mercy, God's truth, God's generosity. They might have heard or read all kinds of complaints about God, or they might have been deeply offended by the failure of Christians or churches to live in ways that demonstrate the gospel fully. But they have never really had the opportunity to examine the biblical claims in tangible, in tasting kinds of ways. You see, when we are lonely, we wallow sometimes too easily in our pity parties. Knowing for sure that we will not be disappointed, David urges us, instead of sitting in a pity party, to say, go tasting. Having experienced God's goodness fully, David is confident that as we do that, we won't fail to taste that goodness of God. And of course, as the church on earth, the Lord's Supper provides the gathered community with an opportunity to taste God's goodness in the past, in the present, and in the future. You see, in the tangible partaking, believers look back to what Christ actually did for us in the breaking of his body and the pouring out of his blood and death. And while sharing the bread and wine, we also experience Christ's presence in our eating and in the present community of those gathered around the table. We're all truly are welcome. We're all are invited to be fed. We're all will receive grace upon grace. It's that vision that God has for humanity. And finally, we look forward to that table, to that fulfillment of Jesus' promise that someday we will feast with him and all the saints at the great banquet of heaven. And I love that vision that we are to work on giving our lives to in the here and now. That vision of what is to come is worth bringing in the here and now. We practice what is going to be the great banquet of heaven. We're all received. We're all are fed. We're all are welcome. We're all are joined together. All are joined together. What a vision. And so as we invite others to share that Lord's presence through a meal, whether it be at church, your home, your apartment, your college dorm room. Maybe we're sitting down, sharing in a conversation, just the delight of being together. Cheese and crackers, sodas and candy bars, sitting, holding hands in prayer, cooking a homemade meal together. Those are opportunities to gather at table that point to a greater table where God truly is present with us and for us. So in this parallel here in the eighth verse of chapter 34, David adds that the person who goes to Yahweh as a haven, meaning like a protection or shelter, that as they go to God, they will be blessed. As a matter of fact, the Hebrew phrase here is more like an exclamation. You will be blessed when you do this. And so do this. Now, David also urges us in this chapter 34, to fear Yahweh. And counter to other teachings of this here in this particular translation, the verb of fear would be more to reverence or honor God. And that fear of honor and reverence is the invitation to participate in thankfulness and praise. You see, when we honor God, we learn to recognize God's goodness in everything that's around us. And it's in that reverent awareness that we can then respond with gratitude. You know, we talk some about having an attitude of gratitude, a posture of generosity or gratefulness. I think it comes through that reverence and honor of God, recognizing we've received all of that as gift. So joy then, the joy of our faith, is that God has made us holy through being covered with God's righteousness, through our incorporation into the body of Christ. Like the prophet in Isaiah 6, we've been cleansed with the burning coal of grace. And that's why Paul addresses his letter to the saints of the various New Testament churches. You already are a saint. You are made to be a saint, a living saint, and then, yes, ultimately, a heavenly saint. But it's the Trinity's action. It's God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit. It's their action that makes you that. And you get to respond to that. The joy of our relationship with God enables us to act more like the saints that God imagines for us, to live in forgiveness and affirmation and gracious empowerment. Our sainthood remains in God, whether or not we're living it out. The hope is, yes, live it out, embrace it, share it, be it. Now, David continues here by recording the promise that we who are saints, honoring Yahweh, that we will lack nothing, that we'll have no need of anything. But that's hard to believe when we're lonely or when we have so many needs, when we feel like we are in lack of something. So is David lying to us here? I don't think so. It's not about the resource or having everything that we need. You see, we're not going to find a person to satisfy our longings by manipulation or exploitation or vindication. There's this image of David using lions to illustrate this thought. And lions would tend to get what they want by force. Well, are we to get what we want or need by force? I think David's assertion here is very carefully constructed to remind us that only by honoring Yahweh do we not lack anything good. We might miss out on certain elements that we think are good, but when we're seeking Yahweh's purposes, we're not going to fall short of anything that is good for us. Again, it might be lean, it might not be a lot, but God is still there. Now she uses this story, and I'm going to read this, so pay attention to the story. But there's this book called The Tower of Gubera. It's an older fantasy by John White, and she said it illustrates this point well. There's a child named Wesley, and he's adventuring in another world, and he encounters Gaul, the shepherd, who images Jesus. In a time of great danger, they converse earnestly as follows about whether fighting evil is worth the effort when the venture might not be successful. Again, is it worth fighting evil if the venture might not be successful? And here's the exchange that they have, this child named Wesley and this shepherd named Gaul. Wesley says, "I suppose you want me to say that it's always worthwhile to fight evil, even if you know you're going to lose, but that doesn't make sense. Yet you want me to say it does." Gaul says, "You seem to know a lot about what I'm thinking. What I really wonder is whether you trust me or not." "Trust you? Yes, you seem to suspect that I do wrong to send you on a dangerous mission like this. It sounds awful when you put it that way. And I think for the moment that you're going to have to trust me, even though I don't tell you all that's going to happen. But Gaul, of course we trust you. You mean you believe I know what I'm doing? It would have been insulting to say no. So Wesley uncomfortably said, yes, I suppose so. I mean, yes. Do you think I don't care about you? Am I, perhaps, not a shepherd after all? As Wesley looked into Gaul's eyes, he knew deep down inside himself that Gaul did care. What's more, he suddenly knew that Gaul knew what he was doing. He also knew that his questions had been pretty insulting to Gaul. He felt small and cheap. Then do as I bid you. The dangers are real, so beware of all I told you. It is not for you to see into the future, only to live in the present moment. And that involves being able to trust me. There we are. Back to trust. Trusting into God. If the Lord were here and we looked into the Lord's eyes, I think we too would see that he cares for us. Even though he might seem to have neglected something that would have been good for us, he does know ultimately what is best. And he grieves with us in our heartbrokenness in the meanwhile. Once again, we are thrown back upon the character of God. Is God good or is he not? Sometimes we don't see that goodness, but we are invited to try it out, to search it out. In fact, because it's there. It's true that human evil often gets in the way of God's perfect will. For example, Yahweh certainly intends for all the people of the world to have adequate food, yes? I mean, look at the design in Genesis. But human greed and the materialistic consumption of the first world violates God's intentions. We in the Christian community must become more deliberate about participating in God's purposes in order for all to be fed. There is enough. There is enough. There is enough. And it's meant to be shared. At the same time here, I think sometimes it's necessary for us to simply rest in what's happening today and to not worry or overly concern ourselves about the future or about comprehending the reasons for the way things are, because if it paralyzes us, frees us, debilitates us, distracts us, it's gotten its way. Blessedness is promised to those who seek the Lord, but the key lies in the seeking. And that means we are called to study and pray, to search and wait, to worship and serve, even to be tested, to struggle, and yes, to suffer. Such disciplines of our mind and spirit are often hard to engage when we're feeling lonely or down or depressed. In those times, especially, we are invited to cling to the promise. Those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. Those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. And believing that statement to be true, we find the contentment to accept whatever blessings are or are not in our lives. That is deep. You've probably heard this phrase before. Contentment is not having all I want, but wanting what I have. Unless our wants are refined by seeking the Lord as David urges, our wants are probably larger than our needs. On the other hand, when the Lord meets our needs, then we can learn to say with Paul, I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. Wow. I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. Only then can we really know joy. So, here at the end, maybe we've learned not to depend so much on what we can sense. Sometimes we will be able to taste and see how good God is. But true maturity of faith will recognize God's love even though from a human perspective we might lack good things. That kind of maturity grows as we continue to seek and search out. There's no power of a lion seeking to rush in and to take, dismantle, and destroy. But it's in the wanting of a saint that we know the fullness of blessedness. May we give up our lion tendencies, and may we embrace the saints that we have been created to be, so that in the here and now, we can truly know the fullness of blessedness. So a few questions for further meditation. Number one, what are some of the ways in which you are most deeply tasting God's goodness right now? Number two, do you receive God's love best through hearing about it, reading about it, or actually tasting it? Number three, what does it mean to you that you are a saint already? And how does it affect your daily life to know that you are one? Number four, have you observed others or yourself trying to meet needs in lion kinds of ways? And what are some of the ways and why will they not ultimately succeed? And the last question, how does it affect your desire to know this promise from Yahweh, that if you continue seeking Him, that you will never lack any good thing for your life? How does that affect you and inform you? Well, God's blessings to you on this day as you lead, love, and serve in Jesus, living as saints in God. Until next time, be well.